I go to pray Manam. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Continuing readings from Gandhara Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 16, text 40. Jitam majita tada bhavata yada bhagavatam dharmam anvadyam nishkinchanaye munaya atma ramayam upasate pavarga atma ramayam upasate pavargaya jitam majita tada bhavata yada bhagavatam dharmam anavdyam nishkinchana yemunaya atma ramayam upasate pavargaya jitam majita tada bhavata yada bhagavatam dharmam anavidyam nishkinchana yemunaya atma ramayam upasate pavargaya jitam majita tada bhava Ajitam conquered. Ajita, O unconquerable one. Tada, then. Pavata, by your lordship. Yada, when. Aha, spoke. Bhagavatam, which helps a devotee approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam, the religious process. Anavadyam, faultless, free from contamination. Nishkinchanaha, who have no desire to be happy with material opulences. Yea, those who? Munaya, great philosophers and exalted sages. Atmarama, who are self-satisfied, being completely aware of their constitutional position as eternal servants of the Lord. Yam, whom? Upasate, worship. Apavargaya, for achieving liberation from material bondage. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. O unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, who are self-satisfied sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. Purport. As stated by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Gyanakarma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Nu Silanam Bhaktir Uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desires for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. The Narada Pancharatra also says, Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. One should be free from all material designations and cleansed of all material contamination. He should be restored to his pure identity, in which he engages his senses in the service of the proprietor of the senses. That is called devotional service. This is also called Bhagavad Dharma. Without material aspirations, one should simply serve Krishna, as advised in Bhagavad Gita, Narada Pancharatra, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Dharma is the process of religion enunciated by pure devotees, direct representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead like Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, and their humble servants in the disciplic succession. By understanding Bhagavad Dharma, one immediately becomes free from material contamination. Living entities who are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are loitering in this material world, suffering. When they are instructed by the Lord Himself about Bhagavad Dharma and they adopt it, that is victory for the Lord. For He then reclaims these fallen souls. A devotee following the principles of Bhagavad Dharma feels very much obliged to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can understand the difference between life without Bhagavad Dharma and life with Bhagavad Dharma, and thus he ever remains obliged to the Lord. Taking to Krishna consciousness and bringing fallen souls to Krishna consciousness is victory for Lord Krishna. Savai pum sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir dadhoksa jay ahoy tuki apritihata yayat masu prasidati. The supreme occupation dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Bhagavatam 1.2.6. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the pure transcendental process of religion. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakdamayam Tati Svapadantikam Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripasindubha evacha titanan pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Translation repeated. O unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, who are self-satisfied sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. Hare Krishna. So we're hearing about the Bhagavad Dharma. Generally, there are many different types of religion, spiritual practice, and unless a religious system is able to culture pure love of God in the individual, then that religion can't said to be fully effective. So the Bhagavad Dharma or the Srimad Bhagavatam is offering the opportunity to everyone to actually achieve the position of pure devotee, which is actually the most rare thing in the world. So this is the incredible mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our disciplic succession of making the most rare thing very actually attainable for anyone and everyone who is sincere to reach that goal. That the process is given by the acharyas and by Krishna, and then it remains with each individual how much sincere they are to actually achieve that goal. So this is described as victory for the Lord. Of course, Krishna is all victorious. Everything is simply a manifestation of the Lord's glory. But particularly, it's being pointed out that victory for Lord Krishna is when the fallen conditioned souls are reclaimed back to Godhead. This is a particular victory of Krishna. Because it's a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. Because the conditioned souls, actually they left Krishna's association. So Krishna is not obliged to them. It's not some requirement, like if a son leaves his father, the father doesn't have to do anything. He can say, well, I wish him the best. But Krishna is so perfect that one of his perfections is his mercy. His mercy is described as actually his greatest quality. And everything in existence is nothing but the energy of Krishna or manifestation of Krishna's mercy. So that's how we have to see everything around us, everything in the world. This entire manifestation is a manifestation of Krishna's mercy because the material world is an opportunity given by Krishna. Even though the fallen conditioned souls don't deserve it, we don't deserve to get the mercy. Just like if you're in a relationship with someone, you're talking with them, and the other person just walks away. Then how do you feel? You don't feel so good. You're not so inclined to that person, right? Or what if they say something really mean to you, and then they stomp off in a way? You're like, okay, you know, I tried. So basically that's what the conditioned soul has done, is that he's turned his back on Krishna. It's described like that. That actually we turned away from Krishna. And there's no real remedy for that. There's nothing that really can fix that mistake unless Krishna gives his mercy. And so just like a loving father, a loving parent, we can always have faith and appreciate that Krishna is continually calling us back to him in so many different ways. And actually at every moment. Every moment is that opportunity to turn back to Krishna. But if our mind is polluted by material desires, as we were saying, without desire for material profit or gain, so when the mind is clouded by fruitive activity, material, I want some desire, then we miss that opportunity. We miss that opportunity to go back to Krishna, to manifest that sincere desire. So therefore, the devotee, he's always on guard. He's always carefully monitoring his mind and his consciousness. You know, what material desires am I harboring? What type of fruitive activities am I still engaged in? What type of philosophical speculation? He has to be very cautious and very introspective as far as his consciousness goes, because a little bit of inattention can actually wreak havoc on the path of devotional service. So the devotion, the path of pure devotion is an opportunity for the greatest thing, but it's also very difficult also, therefore. Because if you want anything great, you have to work very hard for it. So it's not like we can just you know, stroll in here and get pure bhakti. If you really want it, you're going to have to work really hard for it. But there's nothing else worth doing. There's nothing else. So when we develop our intelligence, then we see that this is the only useful endeavor. Even if it's going to be difficult, it's going to be a struggle, it's going to be a challenge, it's going to drive me crazy, you know, trying to control my mind. There's nothing else that's worth doing. Everything else is insubstantial, will not really satisfy me. So this is described, the hoituki apratiyata, that the devotion has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. So if we're not feeling the bliss of bhakti, as they say, or if we're not feeling something during our devotion, then we can think, am I engaging in this activity in an unmotivated way, or do I have some personal desire? And also, is my devotional service unceasing, uninterrupted? Sometimes it feels like, rather than my devotional service being interrupted, it feels like there's so much interruptions, when will it begin? It's mostly just a stream of interruption. I'm hoping when I'm going to get to the point, it's uninterrupted, you know, hoping to get to the point of devotional service. But devotional service has to have that quality, because that brings momentum, just like a train. If a train starts moving, it's slow at first, but it's building momentum. Or if you're like riding a bike downhill, you build momentum. And every time you stop, you know, let's say you pull over your bike and you tie your shoe, then you have to start and you go a little slower. But the great devotees are those who are able to keep it flowing all the time, every day, every moment, actually. And that way, our bhakti gains actually more force, and it can carry us over the little material obstacles that will come in our day-to-day life. Oh, I have this kind of conflict with a devotee, or my mind's still out of control. By force of one's sustained bhakti, then one can more easily overcome those obstacles. And one can ultimately come to the point where there's unceasing devotion. That's the goal. And that requires humility. Humility is so essential in devotional service, because one has to be able to tolerate in this material world. There's going to be so many obstacles in our pursuit of bhakti and so many tests that unless one is really humble, then it will throw them off, you know. So that humility is being able to understand my position. I'm so insignificant. I should just be constantly begging for the Lord's mercy to do anything. I can't even read a book, tie my shoe. I can't even take a spoon to my mouth without Krishna's mercy. So we have to adopt that mood of, at all times, that I'm hopeless. I'm a hopeless case. And that's that position whereby, these are some points I'm just reiterating, but Maharaj explained so amazingly during his Vyas Puja that humility then allows the mercy to flow. Because otherwise there's some sense that I'm okay, I can do it, I can do my service, and that checks the flow of mercy. But really adopting a position that I can't really do anything, it opens the heart. And then once the heart is open, the mercy can flow. And we'll be able to experience reciprocation from Krishna in our services. And also because such an impediment is these different bodily propensities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And out of all the most, what do we do the most? Does anyone know out of those? Yeah. It's described as defending, actually. The defending propensity is so pervasive in a conditioned soul. And when we're in other devotees or something, someone says something to us, something looks at us, that's what derails our bhakti. We're trying to get this momentum. And then we have some little thing, and we can just observe how our mind just shoots off somewhere totally, and Krishna's totally out of the picture. So that humility is the only solution. That understanding our little insignificant position, if someone is rude to me or something, that's their mercy, because that humbles us. That, oh yeah, I thought I was such a great Prabhu or Mataji. I thought I was such a great devotee, but he's treating me like I'm nothing. So immediately the mind will try to react that this is a great injustice. This is an abomination. I need to correct him. But actually, the more mature devotee, he thinks, ah, that's so nice. So many other devotees are saying, great job, Prabhu, great job, Prabhu. This devotee is being so merciful that he's saying, that was terrible, or that was so. So that type of humility, that's what Lord Chaitanya says, that amanina manadena, I'm offering all respects to others. I don't want any respect in return. As long as we're still hankering after any respect, or just, you know, people dealing with us in a nice way, if we're attached to that feeling, then the bhakti is going to always be anishta. It's always going to be shaky because it's depending on circumstances. But when we come out of this bodily concept, sarvapadi vinir muktam tatvaritpena nirmal, I'm free from designations that I'm just a spirit soul, a tiny insignificant spirit soul, then that momentum can build because it's not dependent on the externals, it's not dependent on the circumstance, it's just dependent on my sincere desire to serve Krishna in any circumstance. And my service to Krishna is not some great, some great thing I'm doing for Krishna. Krishna's really appreciative of my service. No, it's simply an opportunity. What service does Krishna need? He's God. He can do anything right away. He can do anything he wants right now. All the services that we're doing, he could easily have covered. He could easily do everything, but he's giving us the opportunity. So our service is not in the mood that I'm rendering some very valuable service to Krishna, but rather Krishna's giving me this opportunity. I hope I can, in a very humble way, see the great devotees, they're endeavoring with so much intensity. They're just 24 hours a day giving everything they can, but they're not thinking this is some great service. They're thinking, I'm hoping Krishna will accept just a small portion of this. Hopefully, maybe I can please Krishna and his devotees a little bit by all this devotional service. What's his name? This great Braj Basi devotee in our movement in Vrindavan. He came, Dinabandhu once said that our service is not so great. It's like a burnt chapati, you know. We're thinking our service, it's a burnt chapati service. So many imperfections are there. But the idea is that the humble mood of offering of love, that Krishna will accept that. That's what this service is an opportunity to do. And when he sees that sincere, humble mood of service, then he's more pleased and more inclined to show so much mercy upon us. As we said, this mercy is the greatest quality. And just by sticking to the process, we can always think how much is in store for the sincere devotee. We have no idea what love of God is. Prema bhakti. We can't even imagine what that experience would be like. But so exalted that material happiness, completely insignificant, even Sayujya Mukti, the liberation of Brahman, merging into Brahman, which is described as like, you know, in the traditional aim of life, moksha, unlimited eternal happiness. But that is compared to like the water in a hoof print. So you have to look at these Goswamis. What are they relishing? Where the greatest happiness in existence is like a little drop compared to an ocean. So that's actually what's in store for us. That's what's at the end of the marathon or the race. It's not even a marathon. It's just, Prabhupada said, in one lifetime, anyone can achieve perfection. So, by staying in association with devotees, the Maya will test us in so many different ways. She's got so many different tricks up her sleeve. And Maya is just the energy of Krishna. So for the devotees, Maya is actually helping them. She's showing us, okay, I have to get to another level of service. Otherwise, I'm feeling shaky. I'm not on solid ground. So the devotees, when we get the challenges and the struggles, we have to see that that's Maya helping us come to another level, a deeper level of devotion. For the non-devotees, Maya is punishing them. She's chastising them. She's smashing them. But for the devotees, it's working in a different way. It's just the internal energy of Krishna, actually. It's Radharani. Because Maya and Devi, they're expansions of Radha. So it's Radharani working in different ways to help the devotees, actually. And Radharani is described as the most compassionate, merciful mother. So she is very pleased when devotees are in harmonious relationships. When devotees, she's described, she nourishes our bhakti. Bhakti creeper is nourished. So we need to make sure that our relationships are very loving and harmonious. And then the mercy, potency, the internal energy will come. Otherwise, it's very difficult to please Krishna. We can't serve Krishna independently without Radharani's mercy. And she wants to see that the devotees are having very nice relationships with each other, respecting each other, and serving the devotees. This is considered a greater service than serving Krishna himself, serving the devotees. So at all opportunities, we live amongst devotees. We have that. We have to see that as an opportunity, not as a burden or a challenge. This is a great opportunity to serve. We have to take pleasure in doing little services for the devotees. That's what great devotees. If you look at devotees like, you know, Vishnu Jan Maharaj, he wasn't just swimming in the ocean of nectar, just serving devotees, new bhaktas. He was doing their laundry and things like that, and he got so much enthusiasm, so much mercy by serving devotees. So that's how we can see the opportunity that we have here in the temple. So the Bhagavad Dharma is distinct from the mundane dharmas and the different so-called religious processes that are nowadays more geared towards sense gratification. You worship God so you can get something. We don't want to approach Krishna for anything, actually. The proper mood is that you've done so much for me already. You're saying here how much obliged one is to the Lord. The devotee is extremely obliged. He doesn't want to demand anything. Krishna's already given me so much. So it's a matter of perspective in Krishna consciousness. It's a matter of how we're seeing the mercy that Krishna's giving in the association, all these things that are in our life. How are we seeing them? How are we valuing them? Because if we're being ungrateful, we're just taking it for granted. You know, ultimately, like if some son is getting so many gifts and favors and things from the family, but he's never being appreciative, it slows up the flow, right? It's like he doesn't even appreciate, so there's going to be a diminishment. But rather, on the other hand, the other kid who's always so grateful for even the smallest things, he gets more and more. So it's aligning our perspective to appreciate. We don't ask for favors. Krishna already knows what we need. So a higher principle is just to ask for service. That's the ideal. And taking to Krishna consciousness and bringing fallen souls to Krishna consciousness is victory for Lord Krishna. So this is Krishna's desire. Krishna is already complete. He has everything. But still, he sometimes feels some wanting to enjoy with all of his parts and parcels. And that's natural, because all this. So this is when we meet with anyone who's not a devotee, then we should feel something in our heart that this is Krishna's part and parcel. This is a very dear devotee of Krishna who's been separated. So is there anything I can do to help reconnect them? And then some compassion should awaken for other living entities, for other people who are not in Krishna consciousness. We want to make sure when we're doing our outreach and preaching activities that actually we're feeling very concerned for them. We have to discriminate. We don't want to think, oh, these are all just the fallen karmis. These are the rascals, envious. That doesn't really soften the heart. And really, the preaching is the opportunity to develop compassion for the other living entities. And then by that compassion, Krishna becomes pleased. And our acharyas and our guru becomes pleased. That's the mood. So we see these other individuals, we can look on a compassion perspective. I hope so maybe I could do some small thing to help this soul come back to Krishna. And seeing it in relationship with Krishna, that actually this is who are these individuals? Who are the souls? This is where the aparads come from. We don't recognize something's relationship with Krishna. We see a distinction. But actually all living entities, they're the potency of the Lord. They're eternal servants of God. You can just imagine, they have a swarup, they have an eternal position of service to Krishna. So therefore it said one should not disrespect anyone, which to speak of devotees who are awakening that. But anyone, any jiva is actually very exalted. This is why in all genuine spiritual traditions, especially in the East, we see that compassion to all living beings, non-violence, is such an essential principle. But for us, we take it a step further because we see that all living entities are eternally servants of Krishna. And that's the prayer that's being made here. So it's 8:10. I think maybe we'll pause there for now. Thank you for the opportunity to speak a little bit. And I hope I can serve you by this. I'll take some questions. Mother Ladini Shakti has a question.
Oh, yeah, first question.
Thank you so much on your class. It was so nice you said so many points on humility. I was remembering something I heard from my spiritual master that many times we think that we are doing Krishna a favor by serving because we feel I could be doing something else, but I'm doing, you know, this service, I'm cleaning or I'm coming for class. And so he was saying that that's a really bad attitude to have, to think we are doing Krishna a favor. And then another thing I heard from Chandravali Maharaj, he said that how would you feel if one day you came and you were, you know, you check your for your mail in the mailbox. He was saying like you went downstairs and you went to get your mail and you saw a note from Krishna saying, thank you, your services are no longer needed.
Your services are no longer needed.
And I was remembering something about
I'll just comment on one thing that Krishna, he doesn't need our service, but he's so grateful. If you hear about Krishna's pastimes, then you just hear how grateful Krishna is for any small thing. So Krishna's heart is very soft. So even though he doesn't require anything, when he sees that a living entity is rendering some service, even something very small, like Sudama, like offering just whatever you can, a little grass mat or something, and Krishna's so endeared by that. So this is the wonder. It's actually inconceivable of Krishna's nature. He has everything. He doesn't need anything. Even some small patram pushpam, Krishna will be pleased by that. So it's a attraction, one of Krishna's qualities. It's very attractive. Yeah.
You just reminded me of a pastime from Srila Prabhupada when in New York, that small, where they first started, that little storehouse or front, what is it?
Yeah, storefront.
Yeah, and Prabhupada was giving a lecture and this drunkard came in and he went straight in the bathroom and he put something in the bathroom and devotees were very annoyed that he was interrupting class. And after he left, Prabhupada said that his service has just begun because he just put some toilet paper, I think, for the devotees. And the devotees were not seeing that, but Srila Prabhupada was saying his devotional service has just begun.
Yes. That's funny. That's nice. Yeah, our own Raktak Prabhu, I don't know if you've heard, but he was associating with devotees when Prabhupada was there, and he donated a motorcycle, a really nice motorcycle. And Prabhupada actually saw that motorcycle. He said, Who has done this? Who's donated this? And they said, oh, it's Bhakta. Prabhupada said, he will become a devotee. Yeah. And that's the blessing of the pure devotee. So, Jai Raktak, he's very fixed up. Okay, something else?
Getting the point that how to keep ourselves hanging in the process is more important, because our mind will definitely push us to do so many things. But the way you had reconfirmed and reiterated the point, staying in the process instead of having so many challenges and working in the process, it's very important rather than following the mind and getting out.
You have to examine what is the mind saying? What is it offering as an alternative? Oh, you can do what? You have to analyze and discriminate. Just see how it's Maya. The devotee's always on guard against Maya. He's always cautious, outside, inside. It's Maya. So in one sense, we're Krishna conscious. We're also Maya conscious. We're also seeing every time some weird thought comes, you know, the intelligence impure, we're saying, ah, that's Maya. So we're always careful, on guard. Because what is it going to offer? Oh, you'll be happy doing XYZ, you know? And so you have to dissect that. Well, let's actually consider, okay, mind, that's what you're thinking. But let's actually consider that. If I go off and I start living on my own, and you have to analyze and see that's not viable. So once it gets in the intelligence, then you see through the preaching of the mind. The mind is preaching according to its past tendencies, like we've been talking about in the Gita class. It's just according to our past tendencies. Well, I'm used to being a lazy rascal, or I'm used to being enjoying, so this is very strange and different for me. It's just because of what the mind's been doing in the past. It's nothing really viable. It's just the mind's attached to what it's been doing for the past so many lifetimes.
Away from Krishna conscious. So it's very, very, very important, this point is that how to fight with the mind and how to be humble, staying in the temple, because our mind will try to find, okay, you are the best, he has done this, he has done this, he has done this. And try to work out the situation and stay in the process.
The more we think that we're elevated, then the less mercy we'll get. And the more we think we're lower, then the more mercy we'll get. Yeah. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Very nice class, especially on the spot. You get a really nice class on the spot. So, you were mentioning that everything is essentially a manifestation of the Lord's mercy. So this reminds me of a particular verse that I was discussing with Nityananda Prabhu a while ago. It's in 264 of the Gita. It says, Raga Dvesha Vimuktai Su Vishaya Indriya Charam Amavishya Vidya Maprasadamadi Gachati. So it basically says, one who is free from all raga and dvesha, attachment and detachment, is able to, and who is able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom, is able to obtain a complete mercy of the Lord. So we may think, you know, so I had a question to Nityananda Prabhu about this verse. It says, one who is free from all attachment, detachment. So in our normal sense, detachment is good. But I asked him the question, that is it similar to the Bhoga Tyaga program? Like a child, he goes after some enjoyment, then he suffers, then he renounces it. So this type of renouncement or detachment is not actually detachment. So we may think if I control, you know, all my senses and I'm, you know, attached from detachment, then I'll be able to get the mercy of the Lord. But in one sense, as Prabhupada mentioned in his verse, he mentioned the word Hrishikena where he quoted the Narada Panchadatra, that basically it's not possible to control the, you know, senses without the mercy of the Lord. Mm. So we may think, okay, if I control my senses, then I'll receive the mercy of the Lord. So can you assimilate those apparent contradictions or
it's impossible to control the mind without Krishna's mercy. Sometimes if we're thinking on my own endeavor, by my own practice, by my own sadhana, you know, let me just really try to control the mind, it doesn't happen. So it's Prabhupada explains that in Gita, that the best process of controlling the mind is chanting Hare Krishna in all humility. Because that means I'm just begging that I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't control my mind. I can't control my senses. So, in that type of mood, then let me try to apply the process, and then Krishna's mercy will control the senses. Senses are Krishna's energy. Mind, intelligence, it's all Krishna's energy. Krishna controls his energy. We don't control it. But if we have the desire that I want to control the mind and senses so I can serve you, then Krishna will control the mind and senses automatically. It's extremely difficult to control the mind. But if we take up the process and we try to follow it for Krishna's pleasure very strictly, then Krishna will easily control his own energies.
Thank you. So this reminds me of one last point, that pretty much you could say any verse of the Gita, practically everyone says it's impossible to control your senses. Like 1 and 2 Sisti, it says the senses are oppressive bomb, like forcing one to do sense gratification. So I was already meditating on this point, you know, writing my little hip-hop lines. So it basically is, like, we've heard the famous saying, you know, hold your horses. So this is actually a very enlightening statement, like, control your horses, your senses. So I was thinking in terms of, as far as humility is concerned, it's impossible to hold your horses unless you continually take Bhakti Sastri humility courses. So I was meditating on that point for my hip-hop line, Hare Krishna.
thing is that you can't learn humility in a class. You can't learn it. Yeah, it's a mood that has to be cultivated. So a lot of what we're after are qualities that you can't get by studying the books, or really, it comes in the application. So we should always try to apply. We're hearing so many messages. Then as soon as the class is over, then it's the application time. Well, how can I implement this? Otherwise, it's just another teaching. It's just a class. And within 20 hours, it's going to be totally forgotten, totally wasted. So we're not really doing the next step of hearing. First we hear, we say, okay, I like that. And then you have to apply it. Otherwise, it's going to be gone. Time is destroys all things. Especially in Kali Yuga, our memory is like very sad. So take the next step, and then throughout the day, you know, Krishna will give us opportunities to apply those things. Jai, anything else?
Thank you.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.